listening to Radio Albion. Hello everybody and welcome to tonight's special stream. We are live tonight on Odyssey, Rumble, DLive and Entropy. Please do share the links because we've got a very special guest here tonight that I'll be introducing shortly. It is of course Germán Rudolph, and before we do that I'm going to give you a couple of updates. Now, as I said, this is a very important stream. It's because we're introducing a special event that Germán Rudolph is hosting called the Holocaust Summit. And this event is something that hopefully will be very big. And this is basically a bit of an advert for the event, a bit of a discussion about how it came about, but also a discussion about who's trying to stop it. So we're going to go through all those things and many more tonight. And at the end, you'll have a chance to ask questions. Now, if you support my work, if you like what I do, please share the stream. But also, if you support my work and like what you do, like what I do, you can give a donation. You can donate through Rumble. You can donate through Entropy. And anything donated throughout the show will be read out live on the show, and any questions will be put directly to Germán Rudolph. So if you ask me a question and or pay for a question via a super chat, I will read it out after the initial presentation and we will answer your questions. All donations are gratefully received. And as I always say, if everyone gave a small amount, $3, $5, $10, that would make a great, great difference. Some of my streams in the past few months have been seen by upwards of 75,000 people. Imagine if everyone had just given $3. What we would be able to do with that money would be almost limitless at that point. But everyone would barely notice that money leaving their account because it's probably the price of an energy drink, probably less than the price of a coffee house coffee, certainly less than the price of a McDonald's double cheeseburger these days. So, you know, if you can afford something, please do consider donating. You can also donate via cryptocurrency. All the crypto links, as always, are in the description below. And you can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And many of you will be saying, well, how can I get in touch with Germán? And this is obviously all about Germán. You can get in touch with Germán via the show notes. The show notes have the link to his website about this very event, so you can find him there. You can also find him on Telegram. So thank you so much to anyone who does donate in advance, and please do consider supporting Germán's event, because that's what this is all about. Now, obviously, Germán is the special guest here tonight, and I did a special show with him a while back. It was an excellent show, and his ability to present his evidence and to tell his story is almost unrivaled. I couldn't believe it. I asked one question and Germán sort of spoke very eloquently for about 58 minutes, at which point we went to questions and answers. It was sort of like the least work I had to do ever in a show. I didn't need to interrupt. I didn't need to ask him any additional questions. He just has this skill of being able to tell his story in a timely way and weave it all together almost perfectly in the allotted space that we had on the show. And after doing that show with him, I was sort of really happy with the way it turned out. I was really happy with the reception Germán got from my audience. And I really did want to have him back on. So when he contacted me and told me he was doing this conference, this summit, I was very happy to promote it. And I asked him straight away, sort of, what can I do to help you? And he said, well, you know, I could always come on the show. So I thought, well, what better way to push this event than invite him back on and spend sort of 45 minutes to an hour talking to him about this event and also just having a general catch up, because the last show, as I said, it was so good and everyone appreciated it so much. I did want to get him back on eventually anyway. So this is a perfect time. Germán, you have been a very busy man since we last spoke. How have you been? And what sort of led up to you wanting to do this event, because you have an excellent website, you have a number of really, really good books, you've been busy with other content creators. I know that you went on Unity News Network and you've had sort of a little flurry of appearances. But if you want to get people up to date with what you've been up to and what sort of inspired you to decide to put on this conference, please tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me on the show again. A short remark, if people want to get in touch with me personally, learn more about me, how they can support me if they are so inclined, the easy way is just go to my personal website, which is germarudolf.com. So you see my name there on the screen. Just put this together without a blank and a .com at the end, and you're on my personal website, and you can browse it there. Now, as to what I've been up to over the past year, the main work that I've been focusing on was getting the Holocaust Encyclopedia, the English edition of which had appeared in late 2023, out in several other languages. The Spanish and French are out. The Spanish came out in, I think it was May of last year, and the French we got out, I think it was in November. So we're up now to four languages: English, German, which was done by a different company, it was not in my ballpark, but the French and the Spanish edition. And that's a lot of work. I mean, writing an encyclopedia is one thing, then AI helps you translate, but at the end, you have to walk through it. Now, my Spanish and French is good enough. I could do most of the proofing and editing myself. And then came the big one that we're preparing right now. It's an Arabic edition. So that's like proofing a pot full of spaghetti, because that's how that language looks like to me. I have no clue about it, but I have professionals working on it. And so this is making good progress, and hopefully within a few months that will hit the mark, and we'll see how that's going to be received, what kind of ripples that we'll have, if any. So that's on that side. Now, coming to the actual event for which we have come together today, Holocaust skeptics have been organizing conferences since the late 1970s and the early crystallization.
Oh, can I just ask a quick question before you go into this? You mentioned that the books are available in French and Spanish, but aren't the Holocaust sort of revisionism laws or laws against revisionist literature in France?
So what?
No, I was just asking about sort of the legality of the sales and sort of what you might have to overcome in that case.
Yes, if I have the intention to abide by unjust and illegitimate laws that violate United Nations Charter of Human Rights, I wouldn't have gotten into the topic to begin with. So I don't give a rat's ass about any dictator passing laws prescribing the writing of history at government gunpoints. This is something that doesn't go down well with me. Now, when it comes to printing and publishing the book, that's an international network, and I'm not going to expose here or reveal here what kind of logistics we use, but it basically gets lost in the massive mail stream that goes into and out of every country every day. So we haven't had any interference, be it getting literature, English literature, or now French also, to Canada, to France, to you name the countries. If we had them by the bag or by the truck load going into the country, that would be selectively subject to border controls. That would be a problem. But it's just going individual for every customer into the mainstream, and this just gets lost in the shuffle. So we haven't encountered any problems yet. So knocking on wood, fingers crossed, and I hope I'm not going to jinx it now.
Yeah. Sorry, Kevin, I was just interested about the logistics of these things, because there are draconian laws, and I think what you're doing is obviously very brave. And that answer of, you know, you're not going to allow unjust laws to stop you, I think you're a very courageous man. So sorry for the interjection. Please continue about the conference.
That's quite all right. Yeah. So back in 1976, the first really scholarly book of Holocaust skepticism was published. That was Arthur Butz's Hoax of the 20th Century, the first edition of which actually was published by Historical Review Press, kind of a small outlet that was established on occasion of that book appearing down in Brighton by Tony Hancock in the UK, even though the author, of course, is in the United States. That was the the launching pad of people getting interested into Holocaust skepticism seriously, but also realizing that this is a serious school of thought that has to be reckoned with. And it led to the formation of the Institute for Historical Review in California, and they did their first conference. Was it 78 or 79? I can't remember. I think it was in 79. And they had subsequently, in over the next two decades, conferences almost on a yearly basis, with a few exceptions. And unfortunately, I mean, they had some internal strifes in the mid-1990s, a kind of a schism there that led to internal fighting. Unfortunately, that's something that occurs on occasion. And that led to the whole school of thought and the Institute losing steam, and eventually those conferences petered out in the early 2000s. And there hasn't been any for the better part of 20 years now. And now I myself participated since the first conference I attended was in 2000, I think. So I participated in the last few that happened until I got arrested and deported back in 2005, and had a hiatus of 6 years in Germany. 44 months of them are full board at government expense. And after I came back to the United States, a little bit shell-shocked, got my feet wet slowly, and eventually got back into the race. But my family situation, I was married to a U.S. citizen, and we had a baby. And, of course, I was deported right out of this family. And she had to raise our daughter the first 6 years almost by herself. And so she was more traumatized by that event of government persecution. It was eventually decided that they deported me in violation of U.S. law. And I had to litigate, but eventually succeeded and came back. And now here I am in the United States, relatively safe from European-style thought crime prosecution. But my wife wasn't happy in me continuing this kind of work, fearing that it would have another negative impact down the road for the family, not just for me. So we had an agreement that I could continue my work privately, but keep my head down and don't limit or try to not even at all have any public exposure. That also means I couldn't do any conferences. I was approached during those years, starting 2014, 15, something, that a conference should be held again, and I would have been the person to go to with my connections, with my involvement in the various organizations, and with my track record of productivity. But I waved it off. I couldn't have pulled it off logistically back then. A physical conference requires a lot of work of getting the venue, organizing food and accommodation for all the people that want to attend, and of course for the presenters themselves. And the costs, the overhead costs, could be daunting. And it's not clear that at the end you actually walk away with profit, more likely not. Most of all, because you always have to have a plan B. The traditional enemies of free speech and freedom of assembly in the past have always tried to shut down events like that. And they most certainly continue doing this to this day, not just when it comes to Holocaust skepticism, but anything that is considered right-wing, whatever that be, even though Holocaust skepticism is neither right nor left. It's about accuracy in history. But it is something that finds interest in the right-wing spectrum of the political spectrum more prominently than in left-wing circles, or libertarian for that matter. Be that as it may, you have to have a plan B, a second venue in case the first bails out under pressure of the usual suspects. You have to quickly be able to switch over, so you always have to pay kind of for both. And if your contracts are not written right, you are stuck paying through the nose. With all these challenges, I said I can't do it apart from the agreement I had with my wife. Now, COVID hit. With all the negative things, there is one upside to COVID. And that is that in the meantime, everyone is used to and technically capable of attending virtual conferences. the kind of discussion we have now with a lot of people watching. We can have 10 people discussing something and 10 million people watching. It has become so common due to COVID that this is something that can now be pulled off. The platforms are there. There are plenty of them. And the overhead costs are reduced. People have the software, have the gadgets to participate, to watch it. And they're used to, particularly the new generation is very comfortable with that kind of technology. So last summer, a friend and supporter of mine, actually a pair of sisters, approached me and said, we need to do something. With Gaza brewing, there's an opportunity opening with people opening their mind that who see that the Zionists and the Jewish Israelis, to a large degree, not all of them, are pushing and committing genocide. That's the United Nations commission has officially recognized Israel is committing a genocide in Gaza, with the justification that they have to preemptively wipe out the Gazans in order to prevent them from committing another Holocaust against the Jews. So the Holocaust is used as a political weapon to commit mass atrocities, to commit a genocide. That has made people realize that the agendas and the historical narrative pushed by Zionists, and that's not just Jewish Zionists, I would say there are more Christian Zionists in the world than there are Jewish Zionists, is recognized by people as being illegitimate, as being driven by a Holocaust narrative that is misused for these ends. And they see how the narrative about what happened on October 7th back in, when was that, 2023, right? So long ago already, wasn't quite accurate what Zionist sources told about it either. So there's the distortion and misuse of history for political purposes. And then people are willing with their open mind, wait, what's going on here, to look back in history and see other cases. And then the mind is open to look at the big elephant in the room when it comes to historical narratives, and that's the Holocaust used by pressure groups, so not just Jewish, not just Zionist ones, to push their agendas. With that said, I couldn't really bail out anymore. Unfortunately, I had gone through a divorce in the meantime. And so a hold still agreement I had with my now ex-wife was no excuse anymore. That had evaporated. So my family situation, also most of my children are now grown up and out of the home. There's only one left who needs a little bit more of tender, loving care still. So that argument is gone. The logistical nightmare of doing physical conferences doesn't exist when you do a virtual one. And I had agreed, okay, let's do it. The sisters actually suggested a name, Holocaust Summit. So I went online and looked whether the domain name is still there. And there was, holocaustsummit.com was available. I instantly reserved it. And we started contacting people who would be willing to present it. Now the website is up. If we can share that screen with the audience, I'd like to go through a number of things we've put up there. So as I mentioned, anyone can go there, holocaustsummit.com. And it is organized and sponsored by a number of organizations. I've actually created a Holocaust Academy roughly a year ago, which I am plan on and am under in the process of developing as a platform to teach sound Holocaust historiography to whoever wants to listen, to give an accurate and a holistic picture of the evidentiary situation when it comes to this event. One of the first things that we're now doing as the academy, major things, we have already given private lessons, but the website itself is currently under development. So having a curriculum of a college style is somewhat daunting, but I'm working together with a retired professor of humanities to get this going. And sometime later this year, we will have that flying. But it will come now into the open as the organization that will officially host the summit, Holocaust Summit. So we are going to be independent. We're going to be fearless, because unfortunately in this area you have to be. And we are not going to be censored if we can help it. And we're not going to be constrained by a politically correct taboos of thinking and asking questions and looking for answers. So we'll be tackling the most harmful ideology undermining peace, truth, and freedom worldwide, because the Holocaust is used to trigger wars and genocides, and it is used to enact censorship laws that suppress the search and the sharing of truth, and thus is used as a starting point for government to increase censorship measures. It's easy to get a quote-unquote anti-Holocaust denial law through parliament. And once the first fortress of freedom has fallen, then censorship like a cancer grows. And we see that in every country. In the UK, you know it for yourself, what's going on in your country. It used to be a stronghold of freedom of speech until they passed the new laws in 2002, I think the Public Communications Act, and now it's completely escalating with the constraints they put on it. So we need to be aware that the Holocaust is at the center of the Orthodox Holocaust narrative, and its abuse, its misuse for political purposes is at the center of the problem of deteriorating freedom worldwide, or at least in the Western Hemisphere. Now, we have picked the 27th of January, which, what is today, the 23rd, so it's just in 4 days. And next Tuesday should be. We picked that day for a reason. 27th of January, 1945, was the day when the Red Army conquered the Auschwitz camp. And I choose that word wisely, because the Red Army never liberated anyone. So they conquered the camp. And in 2005, if I'm not mistaken, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a resolution declaring that particular day, the 27th of January, International Holocaust Remembrance Day. So the iconic camp of Auschwitz, which is the most known alleged crime scene of what is labeled the Holocaust. Auschwitz is also the reason why we have this day as the International Day of commemorating this event. And we want to use that too, commemorating the truth and the lies, the exaggerations and distortions, and the victims of this Holocaust narrative. The Gazans are the most recent, most extreme victims of this narrative, but we will have people present their experience of persecution and prosecution, victims, martyrs, dissidents thrown into prison, or having their livelihood destroyed. So there's a lot to commemorate and remember for us as well, and we will do that as well. So the event itself will start at 9 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, which, if I'm not mistaken, is 2 o'clock in the afternoon for the U.K. and 3 p.m. For the rest of most of the European
continent.
I think it's
7 p.m. in the U.K. 2 p.m. Eastern is 7 p.m. in the U.K.
Yeah, but we start at 9 a.m., so it should be 2 p.m.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. We actually may start the stream a little earlier to test things and make things sure that things are running smoothly, and make a few accommodations and have a few organizational remarks before actually the day picks up with the presentations that we have. Now, if you click on the second link there that says see our list and timeline or presenters, that gets everyone down to the actual table where we have the presenters. So this is our day, how we plan on having it unfold. We have the day started out with a contribution that I'm giving. Originally, we had hoped actually for Nicholas Kollerstrom to take that spot. He initially had submitted a paper, but then he had to retract it because he came under pressure, has been under pressure for a long time. So he had to he wanted to talk about the English decrypts of as communications. But anyway, this is not going to happen. There's already one casualty of censorship and suppression, which is mounting and increasing in the UK. So I've taken that spot, and I take the opportunity because we that event. Short side note here: that event, of course, is streamed live. We will have the links on that website where people can reach it. Actually, at the top there is already one, and we'll keep that updated. But it's a Tuesday. Not everyone will be able to sit and watch an event like this all day on a normal work day. We will, of course, record it. It will be posted, and people will be able to watch it whenever they please. And we will have it not only on our holocaustsummit.com website, but the company that actually hosts it, at least the plan, is ftgmedia.com. And they are an independent platform. So when it comes to them, we will not be deplatformed because it's owned actually by one of the board members of one of our main sponsors, which is the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. And he's on the board there, and he has suggested we use that platform so that we can't be deplatformed. I will be talking about 80 years of Holocaust skepticism, whence we came and where we are. So I give a historical overview, since we assume that a lot of people over time, as years go by and these contributions will be accessible, a lot of people will not know much about our school of thought, its history, and its views, that an introduction is due. We haven't had anything like this happen in 20 years. So there's an entire generation that has grown up, which needs to be or should be given an introduction of what we are handling and what we're dealing with here. So I will be talking about the main events and the main achievements of Holocaust skepticism over the past, well, since the end of the war, basically 1946 or 47 when it kind of started. And in the second half, I will give a quick rundown, giving the most striking, the most convincing arguments why everyone should be skeptical about the mainstream Holocaust narrative, and give resources in that context where people can learn more. So with that, the event kicks off. Every full contribution will have 45 minutes. I hope everyone stays in that slot, but you know how it goes. There will be a time overrun possibly, followed by 50 minutes of question answers. There will be a chat feature. FTGmedia.com, like any other, like Rumble, like YouTube, has a chat feature. In order to chat, you have to have registered with the platform. That doesn't cost anything. You just submit your email address and get a free account, and then you can chat. Now, for the question and answer series session at the end, the last quarter hour, people are requested to make a donation in order to submit a question, like the Super Chat in various other platforms. And you, in order to do that, you have to have a wallet with FTG Media. And the wallet is just automatically set up when you get an account. You just have to fill it with some funds, whatever resources you take it from, plastic money or a crypto or whatever. So that is the plan. My contribution is followed by a compatriot of yours, James Mosley, who is a Catholic priest from the UK. He has done a number of documentaries on the Holocaust over the past several years, really good documentaries. And when he was working on his first one, he approached me and asked me a number of questions. So I became his historical advisor, if you wish. Each time he was working on one, he submitted what he was doing, and I would make suggestion on how to improve it. And he will be presenting what he found about the evidentiary situation in one particular camp that he had investigated and done a documentary on, and that's Treblinka. Now, if you click on James Mosley's name up there in the list, that actually will get you to for every one of the presenters, will get you to where there's a short bio. You can see a portrait and a summary of the presentation. If you scroll a little up or down, you can go back to the list. back to the timetable, right? And we're back where we are. So this is James Maudsley. We have actually grouped the European presenters first. UK comes first. James Maudsley, next one is Peter Rushton, also from the UK, and he'll be talking about also history between dogma and taboo. He talks about the British intelligence communications and interaction with the German intelligence toward the end of the war, looking for evidence that the Brits were really thinking that the German intelligence community, which was under the rule of Heinrich Himmler, the supposed main architect of the Holocaust, that the British were actually acting and communicating as if they believed that Himmler was really murdering or had already murdered at that point of time 6 million Jews. It's a very interesting contribution I'm looking forward to myself. And the title of it, The Dog That Didn't Bark, is already an indication of what, which direction that will go. We're having a lunch break after that. That is scheduled to be 2 hours long. Now I expect some time overruns and maybe stretching into the hour between 12 and 1. But we will have enough time during that break, and I have yet to announce that because we just finished up preparing for this. The lunch break will see the premiering of a new documentary we have just finished. And this is about a appearance of representatives of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust in the public arena. And we had a little bit of an impact there, and we want to share that with the community. That's, I think, 35 minutes, so it will fit in there either way. So in the afternoon, the first session is actually shared by three individuals who will be talking about their personal experience getting into Holocaust skepticism, how that happened, and then also to what degree they were exposed to persecution, prosecution, ostracism, and that kind of stuff. Nathaniel Kapner has been a very active person on social media, on YouTube, and now on other alternative platforms, going after self-chosen people and their capers, and also critiquing the misuse of history for political purposes. Leo Walz is a bookstore owner in the U.S. who tells his story of how that went when he started offering books that most don't like. And Georges Martel is actually a French fellow who has had decades of experiences of exposure to persecution in France, which leads us then to the next contribution. That's a bigger one. Seasoned revisionist Vincent Renoir from France has under his belt now already 30 years of activism and I would say historical skepticism in general on the World War II issue, not just the Holocaust. And he has been the main focus as of the last 2-3 years of the French judiciary to lock him away for good. He currently has to deal with 7 court cases at once. He will be speaking during his presentation primarily about his experience of the abuse, no, not the abuse, the misuse of the law and the judiciary to suppress dissidents, peaceful dissidents on historical issues. And after that, we go into abuse of power and politics based on history. Heinz Bartisch and Andrew Allen will report about their experience with the Office of Special Investigations of Yale, that's the Jewish branch of the FBI that was focusing on what they call informally Nazi hunting, hunting down immigrants who had some association during the war with what the Axis powers were doing. And the OSI was trying to deprive them of their immigration status or even citizenship and deport them to Europe to have them put on show trials there. The biggest case known is probably the case of Ivan Demjanjuk, John Demjanjuk from the 1980s. Bartisch and Allen will actually discuss a different case that concerns Heinz Bartisch's father, late father, who the OSI wanted to deport. And they got a bloody nose because they didn't reckon with the stiff resistance and skilled defense that Andrew Allen, a lawyer from the San Francisco Bay Area, was putting up. They were presenting some insight into how the FBI's branch back in the days, it has been disbanded by now, was violating the law, breaking the law left and right, and forging evidence and so forth in order to frame immigrants just to have a heyday for themselves or to push Holocaust propaganda. After that, we have retired Professor Dr. David Scribina, who used to lecture in the humanities and philosophy at Michigan State University, if I'm not mistaken. He will be talking about early mainstream voices of Holocaust skepticism already during the war and right not too long after the war, which shows that back in the days, even mainstream people were skeptical about the narrative being pushed at war's end. And we wrap up the day, making full circle what I started beginning the day, showing where we came from and where we are. Colm Antonio, probably the most prolific revisionist scholar and writer that we have, but in my opinion, also the most knowledgeable Holocaust scholar on the planet, the mainstream included. He can't speak English or understand it well, and he is currently in a besieged situation in Italy, where they passed a law in 2016 threatening anyone voicing their dissent on the Holocaust narrative with up to 6 years in prison. Now, they haven't done anything against him, even though he kept publishing books by the truckload. I think he's by now more than 50 books published on that topic. But he does that in a very scholarly manner and in a very low profile. So it's never in Italy, you know, there are a few 10 people who maybe buy the books, but they're kind of shelf warmers. And he wants to keep it that way. He doesn't want to gain a larger profile. He wants to do his work underneath the radar of public attention in Italy. And therefore, he has submitted his paper to me to present it. And I have increased it by my own take of where do we go from here. One part of it is, what are the white spots on the map of Holocaust historiography, which still need to be investigated, explored, but also what else needs to be done to hand the relay staff over to the next generation. And there are some quite promising prospects when it comes to new people coming on board with new ideas, with the help of new technologies, bringing it to a new level and a different level. So trying to imitate or copy what Colm Antonio has done with his massive work is not what's going to happen. The direction, I think, will go somewhere completely different. And I will be talking about that, and hopefully this is going to happen. And with this, I hope we will be closing the day. Now, there's always a possibility that things don't run as smoothly as they are listed here. Just today, we got information that a powerful group, international group in the business of suppressing a free speech and freedom of assembly, they call themselves opponents against racism and anti-Semitism. But basically what that means is they want to stifle anyone who has an opinion that certain ethnic and religious groups with power and influence don't want to hear. So they are working in the background. We know of that. And we hopefully will be able to prepare for this. But there's no way of telling, from DDoS attacks to trying to get to the backbone provider and what have you. Anything is possible these days. If it takes to turn off the power plant so you don't have electricity, if that's what it takes, that's what they'll do. So we expect something. They have noticed with the kind of exposure that our summit has already received beforehand, that we are there, what we're doing, and that we are reaching out and having a ripple effect, and they don't like it. Now, the kind of presentation that I'm giving here right now, I've done a number of them. If you scroll up on the screen here slowly, you can actually see listed on the right-hand side a number of presentations linked to of other platforms where I have given an introduction to these events, to this event. So if anyone is interested in listening to those, you just click on the image and go to the respective platform, which is usually Rumble or BitChute, where this is posted. And because of this, I think, and you helping out now too, this event hopefully is going to be a success. It promises to be a success for us, and it threatens to become one for those who don't want our voices to be heard. So there is going to be in the background the usual electronic warfare from the traditional enemies of free speech to be expected, and we will see how that goes. This is, by and large, my narrative. Now, we are here right on the screen where the organization of that event is shown. We actually, when we submitted to people who were potentially able to give presentations, the invitation to do so, we said we basically accept papers on three main topics. The first is Holocaust in History, Taboo Between Dogma and Dissent. It just talks about new historical findings and insights and interpretations on the event itself. The next one is Holocaust in Politics, History as a Weapon. And I mentioned we have one contribution in this regard, which will discuss the weaponization of immigration law against immigrants in order to get propaganda campaigns out of it. And the last one is Holocaust in Human Rights, History as a Muzzle, a Holocaust used to push censorship. And we have a number of presenters, as mentioned, who will discuss their very private experience of censorship. So it should all be civilized and decent, and for no one to get overly excited about in either direction. But of course, certain groups get extremely excited if they fear that voices be heard that can disrupt their main source of power and influence. And there's a lot at stake for them, and they will go to extremes if need be to shut us down. We'll see who at the end will have the upper hand.
So are you expecting the usual sort of suspects to try and put a stop to this? Have you had anybody threaten your platform, or have you had any threats in the run-up to this, or any attempts to stop this already?
Yes. Today we got an information that, as I mentioned, you can have your own platform, which is a computer program, but it has to run at the end of the day, it has to run on a server, and it has to have the connection to the backbone with the internet cables with enough bandwidth. And usually you have some company providing services from the telecommunications company that hooks you up to what we call today the internet, the physical internet, to companies who do server co-location or dedicated server renting. And along that line, I'm not quite sure what it was, and I wouldn't necessarily want to reveal it either. We already had approaches from certain quarters of pressure groups to shut down any link in that chain that would get our voice from where we sit to the internet, to the world. So that's going on in the background, and we have to see how that goes. Nothing has been shut down yet, but they're trying.
And when you kick this off, what sort of attendance are you expecting?
Well, the Holocaust Summit website itself, holocaustsummit.com, if you go to the top, you actually see a link there where people can jump to the sign-up form and just submit their email address, so that they can stay informed if there are any sudden changes in the timeline, in whatever is going to happen, because we never know. If we go by that, the last time I checked, and that's a week ago, and that's not quite accurate, there were we had submitted 300 emails through that. But I would expect these are only the hardcore ones who are willing to share their email. and the other. There's not really a need if you just keep to the website, go to the website and look up what the link is to the actual event, and we will have it posted on other websites as well. You don't have to identify yourself. So I would assume that the vast majority will not identify themselves even with an anonymous email. So we need to see how it goes. I don't know. Sign up has really accelerated with my frequent appearances on shows like yours over the past 2 weeks. And I would assume by now we have probably harvested several hundred more. But there's no way of telling, as I mentioned, how many people who will attend will actually have submitted their email address. I would assume it's a minority. So hopefully we are going to have several thousand, which will most certainly far exceed the range we could have had in the past with physical conferences, which were limited to a few hundred. And of course, then we have it not just streamed, but we have it posted. So on the usual platforms that will reach many, many more thousands, 10,000s in days, weeks, a month, and years to come.
And bearing in mind, you said you are going to be doing donations and questions and answers on the day. How do you expect, is there a way that people can sort of sponsor you in advance? So obviously these events, they take a lot of time and effort to put together. I know it's not a physical event and I know you're not paying people to be there, but is there a way that people can actually sponsor the event and make donations in advance to help you guys with your infrastructure and to make sure the event goes smoothly?
Absolutely. The HolocaustSummit.com website itself, if you were to go there and you go to the very end of the very bottom of the page, it shows the logos of the two companies who are the main sponsors and have officially declared themselves to be sponsors. You know, most actually want to stay anonymous. But there's also a link that simply says, become an OMRIC Holocaust Summit sponsor today, which gets you to the shop of our Holocaust Academy, where you can buy sponsorship packages. And that actually has several tiers of whatever you want to invest in it. And this would be the way to go. So HolocaustSummit.com, at the very bottom of the page, that's where you could chip in to cover any costs. Most of us are actually working for free right now. There's no payment. And FTGmedia.com is a sponsor itself, and their way of sponsoring is by giving us access to the platform free of charge. We don't know what happens if, excuse my French, shit hit the fan with all kinds of attempts to shut us down, and then we have to come to some more expensive ad hoc solutions to circumvent these things. There's no way of telling right now.
And one final question. So with it being on a Tuesday, it's going to be difficult for some people to attend. Obviously, it looks like it's going to be a fascinating day, and your lineup is an extremely strong lineup. And it's rare to have a conference that is that well packed with guests, you know, to start at 9 a.m. and go all the way through to 6 p.m. It's a big event. So, where will this be posted for replay? Is this going to be up on Odyssey? What sort of places will it be available on replay? And as a final sort of additional question, usually with conferences, there are some kind of sort of, I don't know, maybe a brochure or some kind of, physical keepsakes available. Is there any merchandise that people can purchase as well to support the event? So sort of two questions there. Will there be sort of a full re-upload of everything? And is there, like, you know, to commemorate this, any kind of physical merchandise that supporters could also purchase?
Yeah. So to the first question, once the event is over, it's getting archived on our own website, HolocaustSummit.com. It will be moved to a folder 2026, and we will have there with posters and a short description, all the contributions listed. You click on it and you go, you will probably have several options. They will be on Rumble, on BitChute, on Odyssey, and you can pick which platform you want to watch it on. We are probably not going to strain our own server because those platforms are good enough. So this will all be available, and the link to that archive will then be, of course, on the front page, on the home page, prominently displayed. When it comes to merchandise, we just started developing that. And if I am not mistaken, let me have a quick look where we are with this. No, my menu is always show, but it's not showing. Let me, oh, here it is. The only company right now that actually has a merch contract is Armreg, and we are developing. Now, if you were to go to armreg.co.uk, as you know, the publishing branch of what we are doing is actually located in the UK. It is located in London. So if you go to armreg.co.uk and share that with the audience, or do you want me to share it? Which way is faster?
I'm just doing that myself now. So armreg.co.uk. I'm just bringing that up. That'll be 2 seconds. Just give me a couple of seconds just to get that set up. Just takes me. There we go.
Okay. Now, at the top menu, you see merch as the third entry.
Yeah.
Click on that. That's for merchandise. And once that has loaded.
Oh, it has loaded. Sorry, it's just now I have to share that window as well. Just give me a second because it's a pop out window. So, 2 seconds. It's weird how that works. Give me a second.
Mm-hmm.
Share screen. That's the one. Yeah.
That's the one, yeah. So if you scroll down a little, we have our various merchandise there. There's one for Armreg itself and general stuff. And there you see some merchandise. We have a mug and a T-shirt right now that has the announcement of that particular event.
Wonderful.
So that's how to go about it. Now I have still to put that link more prominently on the Holocaust Summit website so people can get there directly. And that's a good point for you to make that, and I will make that happen once we're off here. And I will add that to the site so people can get to the merchandise easily.
Well, thank you so much. We do have some super chats, so I'm just going to bring them up 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a couple that hung over from the other night, so I'll deal with them quickly. Covenant Soldier gave $10, thank you so much, and said, love the show with Rob Rundo. Hail the Active Clubs, thank you so much. Flying Dutchman gave $50, thank you very much, and said, catching up, happy new year. Well, thank you, my friend. I've actually sent you a message today, so you can pick that up on Telegram, thank you very much. Nationalist Nationalist gave $3, thank you so much, and said, hope and encouragement to those suffering in silence. Well, thank you so much. Some Guy 14 gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, huge respect to Mr. Rudolph. Thank you so much. And Aunt Sally gave $5 and said, Mark, how likely am I to get my door kicked in for watching this conference? Do you think in the UK?
No.
You see, one thing I'll say is, like, in the UK, if I'm correct, and I'm just sort of getting this as correct as I can, in the UK, it isn't illegal to actually deny the Holocaust or to engage in revisionism, as far as I know. However, if you were to do so in a way that was seen as insulting or demeaning to people, it would be. So if you were making jokes or if you were saying things which were couched in the way that was meant to be insulting, that may be illegal. However, if you were doing sort of academic work, such as what you do, that would be seen in a different light. So I think in the UK, this would be legal, but it would be very hard for anyone to get into trouble for simply watching this at home. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. We have, with all the censorship laws we have, not a single case where a country has stooped down to the point where they persecute people for just attending, listening, and consuming. Even the countries with the harshest policies when it comes to this, that's Austria and Germany, you can, for instance, you can buy Holocaust skeptical literature that is not illegal if you buy only one copy for your own use. If the government happens to intercept it, they can still destroy it, but they can't prosecute you for it. The same with attending a conference like this. It is not an offense in any country of the Western world. And when it comes to the UK, case law says you can contest the mainstream Holocaust narrative until you're blue in the face. What you cannot do is, in that contest, disparage victims, survivors, martyrs, whatever is seen. So in any way, talking ironically, sarcastically, humorously, or in any way that is considered offending toward the survivors or the victims and so forth. Now, the company, as I just mentioned, armreg.co.uk, that has published and republished all this material. And before that, we were actually in the UK since 1996. I lived in the UK until 1999. And I started the whole operation there. And the outlet was called Castle Hill Publishers. And it has gone belly up in late 2023. And then we switched over to Armreg. So just a reorganization, basically. Almost at all times been in the UK, except for a stretch of 1.5, 2 years. And we have never been harassed by anyone. So keeping it scholarly, keeping it matter-of-factly and civilized, as you should any discourse anyhow, keeps you safe in the UK for now. Anyone attending, when you are in the chat and you make comments in there that can be considered disparaging to Jews in general, or survivors or descendants and victims of the National Socialist persecution of the Jews, and you do that with an account that for some reason, because you set it up that way, allows the authorities to identify you, which would probably not be smart if if you want to go on FTG Media or somewhere else, use an ID that doesn't allow anyone to identify you. And if an email is required, if you want safety, use a burner email or some email that is not officially traceable to you directly. However, if you abstain from making those kind of comments, which I advise under any circumstances, because nasty language doesn't reflect good on the community, and I'm no fan of it. So if you abstain from these kind of comments, you should be good under any circumstances on any place on this planet. It's different for our presenters. Some of them come from Europe. And as I've mentioned, when we're talking about those coming from France, they're talking about their persecution. They're not going to make statements on history themselves, because we don't want to get them in trouble. And if we have the question and answer session, I would like the audience also to abstain from questions that corners those French individuals and putting them on the spot, because they need to fly home and don't want to be arrested. Not fly home, but they are, because at home they don't want to get arrested the next morning or whenever.
Yeah, and I want to echo that. I mean, look, I believe it's very important to talk about the kind of things that we're talking about tonight. I think it's important that we discuss things like this. But I also think it's very important to ensure that we do so in a productive and polite manner, talking about this kind of stuff in a way that is disparaging or rude or ridiculous. It not only opens you up for arrest, which is a ridiculous position to put yourself in, but it also demeans the seriousness of the topic, and it takes what we do out of an academic light. Now, I'm not a revisionist. I talk about revisionism. I have revisionist guests on, but I'm generally speaking somebody who talks about demography and Jewish or Zionist power, and the way that Jewish power affects the Western world. They're the topics that I mainly specialize in. I do speak to revisionists. I'm interested in it. But obviously, if you are going to get involved in this, my suggestion is that you deal with it in an academic way for your own safety. And also, so the topic is held in the high regard that it deserves to be held in. If you're there sort of cracking jokes and sharing memes and trying to be as edgy as possible, kind of undermines what people like Germar are doing. And there's an awful lot of revisionists who have suffered greatly at the hands of the authorities over the years. And you don't want to demean their suffering and their sacrifices. We've got a $5 super chat from Mr. Smalls14, who, regardless of what I just said, Germar, is it true you tried to sell soap in Sacramento with Pastor Eli? That's obviously one of those jokes. You don't have to answer that if you don't wish. No. So,
The UK's attitude towards Germany is that Germans have no humor. And you need to understand that the chicken has come to roost. The UK, as a winner of the Second World War, has pushed Germany in the situation where Germans can go to prison for jokes. The shortest German joke. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
The German word for joke is Witz. Okay? And the shortest German joke is Auschwitz.
Well, yes.
That gets you in prison in Germany.
Indeed. Indeed.
So Germans don't have humor because they have to watch their back, and they had to have watched their backs for centuries. The Nazis didn't invent book burning, and the current government didn't invent censorship laws. Germany has been under the stranglehold in the medievals of the Holy Inquisition, the worst of all European countries. So it has been bred into the German and out of the Germans to make certain jokes. Jokes live from the tension of putting things together that are not quite acceptable, talking seriously about them, so you package them. And that is exactly the attempt that this fellow has been doing, pushing the envelope into the not quite acceptable, but making this joke. And that has become a crime in Germany and in borderline areas, has always been. And now in the UK, people are getting in trouble for showing sarcasm, irony, and so forth in that context. If and when jokes become punishable by law, you stop laughing. And I take that opportunity to make that clear, these kind of jokes. Make them when you're sitting in the bar, but don't make them publicly.
Yeah, I want to sort of echo this. So this is a serious point. So I actually believe that when it comes to comedy, when it comes to humor, when it comes to making a joke, really nothing should be off limits. And once you start making certain things off limits, it's very easy to make anything and everything off limits. So then you get sort of the Edinburgh Fringe voting the joke of the year as why did the chicken cross the road? Because no one's allowed to actually joke about anything else. And I think it was Jimmy Carr who made the remark, a famous British comedian who made the remark that he's probably already made the joke that will get him one day cancelled and ruin his career. And that's how it is, because we constantly see the mainstream media, liberals, sort of fans of censorship, spending hours, if not days, if not in some cases weeks, trawling through people's back catalogue of streams, tweets, Facebook posts, searching for something that they can find offensive in order to cancel someone, or worse still, get them arrested. And I find this very interesting, because I've wrestled with this myself. People might say, well, look, Mark, I came to your shows and I've now watched 200 hours of them and I found these three things offensive. And my question would be, if you came to the shows of Britain's leading ethno-nationalist and you were looking to find something offensive, is that really my fault? You know, I'm not out there saying it in the street. I'm not shouting it through a megaphone into people's faces. I'm hosting a show. People come to the show. They know what they're going to get when they come to the show. This isn't something that's being broadcast, you know, to every car and home and workplace in the UK. You come here and you seek this out knowing that you're going to get a discussion about things relating to our cause. And I think the people going out of their way to dig things up on people and to, you know, it's like Germar's conference. If you were to go there and to record everything that was said and watch it in detail, taking notes, looking to find something offensive, that kind of defeats the object of watching the conference in the first place or attending the conference in the first place, because you're not going there in good faith and then finding it offensive by accident. You're going there on purpose to look for a reason to be offended so that you can then report it. And this is one of the widespread problems in the West, that the people who claim they don't want to be offended will go out of their way and go to great lengths in order to be offended, or so they can claim that they were offended, in order to report people to the authorities, which is just essentially a charter for censorship allowing this to happen. But I do always ask people to be respectful, to exercise caution, not to use racial slurs. As I said to all my guests, you know, please abide by sensible rules so that we are always the polite academic group that talk about things in a sensible manner. And one thing that impresses me with Germar, both times I've had him on, is the way he can speak so fluently and in such a way that I think it would be impossible for anyone to find him offensive unless they were going out of their way to do so. Optics Prime gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, this man is a national treasure. Thank you for your work. Good, sir. Well, thank you for that super chat. Lars Agerback with AE gave $15. Thank you so much. And he said, a positive story from Denmark. Today, our Supreme Court acquitted a man for hosting a site with racist jokes, old-fashioned Holocaust jokes amongst them. The case has been through all three courts and has been going for over 6 years. This is a win for freedom of speech. Well, that is certainly good news from Denmark. And I hope to see more of
Denmark regarding Denmark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. 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 Denmark has been a stronghold in all those years. Some German Holocaust skeptics and historical skeptics actually fled to Denmark and found refuge there over the past four, five, six decades. So, yeah.
And I'd like to say as well, big thank you to Malibu and Coke for gifting 10 subs to the channel. And as I always say, those who accept the gifted subs, it would mean a great deal to me if you kept them up. You know, $5 a month means very little to most people. But if I had 400 or 500 people every month subbing my channel, it would take a lot of weight off my mind at the beginning of every month. And that's the end of the Super Chat. So I'm going to bring the stream to a close now. You've been a wonderful guest as ever. The advert for the conference has been excellent. And again, you've done most of the heavy lifting tonight and most of the speaking. But is there anything you'd like to say as a final thought before we wrap things up?
Not much more than holocaustsummit.com. So the ultimate link will be streaming, and that can change any minute depending on what happens, will be posted there. If you submit your email, you'll get it also in an email. And I hope we all see you there. And we are going to build a new community that gets stronger by the day.
Well, thank you so much. I'd like to thank Germar for being here. He's a courageous guy. He's a very good speaker. We have interviewed him in full before. If you want to watch that interview, it is in my previous videos. Go and watch it. It's well worth watching. It's a 2-hour special, that one, where we talk about Germar's personal journey, what he's been through, the incredible repression he's faced and his incredible journey in his life. Please do that. And also support his event, support his work. He's a really nice guy. It was really kind of him to come on here tonight. And he's been, as always, the perfect guest. I'd like to remind you all that I will be back on Sunday with the ladies from Return to the Land. So that's three housewives, mothers and homeschoolers from Return to the Land talking about women in nationalism and their roles as mothers and homemakers and educators. So that'll be an interesting stream. Please join me then, 7 p.m. UK time on Sunday for that. Until then, if you're out doing activism at the weekend, please be safe, stay within the law and know your rights. And until Sunday, have a great evening, have a great weekend, and I'll see you all again soon. Thank you to Germar, thank you to everyone who donated so generously, and as always, thank you to this wonderful community for supporting us, for supporting these shows, and for supporting the good work of my guests. Thank you, everyone. I love you all. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.